4 o'clock p.m. and time for the WRIR Agriculture Report.
Don, you're having another dream sequence.
You are listening to 97.3 LPFM, and this is Open Source RVA. On this episode of Open Source RVA, we'll introduce you to Richmond's new 9th District City Councilperson, Michelle Mosby. We'll talk to her about her surprise upset victory in November, her focus on schools, and how she, as a political neophyte, is learning the ropes at City Hall. We'll also talk with Jeff Roll of the James River Film Society about Saturday night's James River Filmmakers Forum. And we'll interview director Christine Stoddard about her new movie about Edgar Allan Poe, which will be screened at the forum. But first, here are some of the top stories making headlines right now.
For Open Source RVA, I'm Amy Daniel, and here's the news. The fatal results of a shooting in the Woodland Heights neighborhood on Sunday the 19th makes the third homicide in Richmond this calendar year. 34-year-old Jared P. Ellison was found shot around 9 p.m. Sunday at the intersection of Forest Hill Avenue and West 24th Street. Ellison was moved to a hospital where he later died from his injuries. The Richmond Police Department announced an arrest in the case on Thursday. As of today's date, February the 22nd last year, Richmond had already seen 5 homicides. The Richmond Police Department's ongoing public legal scuffle with the Wingnut Anarchist Collective over the contents of an accidentally discarded USB drive has so far cost taxpayers $128,119.17, according to the department's legal counsel, Victoria Benjamin. The $330 per hour meter has been running at the Reed Smith Law Firm since mid-November as, according to various city sources, the police pressed their civil suit against the anarchist group and its most prominent member, Mariah Karn, with the objective of finding cause to press charges in an ongoing criminal investigation related to the same USB drive. Benjamin, who had initially declined to provide the tally in her response to a previous information request, indicated that the amount reflects a total so far spent as of February 19th. The USB drive at the center of the lawsuit and the criminal investigation contained various police documents, including multiple revised copies of the department's operational protocol manual. An individual known in court documents only as John Q. Public allegedly found the drive. Public, who appeared on this program on November the 23rd, said he discovered the drive in a public place near police headquarters. He said it appeared to have been lost or intentionally discarded by a ranking member of the department. Public gave the drive to Karn and the Wingnut, and the group then published some documents on the drive to its website, which raised the ire of and inspired an injunction by police officials. Earlier this month, Open Source co-host Chris Dovey was subpoenaed to give a deposition in the civil suit. That deposition, which took nearly 3 hours, focused on efforts to determine the identity of Public, who appeared on Open Source on the condition that he remained anonymous. Richmond police were also invited to participate in that November 23rd interview, but declined. Will former artistic director Carol Pearsall finally return to the Firehouse Theater Project, the local performing arts company she co-founded 19 years ago? Adrian Ryder, an actor who helped to present a compromise proposal on Wednesday night to the Firehouse Board of Directors that would bring Pearsall back to the nonprofit, tells Open Source RVA that the 40-minute meeting was productive and that it appeared that nothing was off the table. The Board of Directors' yes or no vote on the proposal, presented by Ryder along with theater director Rusty Wilson, actor Joe Insko, and longtime Firehouse patron Dennis Lieberman, is only the latest development in a 2-month controversy that began when the board forced Pearsall to resign on December 14th. Also in hand during Wednesday's meeting was the interim Firehouse artistic director Jace Smith and managing director Jenny Mallory, as well as interim advisor Randy Wyckoff. The proposal's details include reinstating Pearsall as artistic director and installing a community advisory board that would help in mending relations. In an interview with Open Source RVA in late January, Firehouse board chair Kay Holmes insisted that the governing body of the nonprofit was willing to re-engage Pearsall and a decision on Wednesday's proposal is expected to be announced at the Board of Directors' next meeting in March. For Open Source RVA's continuing coverage of the Firehouse Theater controversy, including more details on the proposal, go to our webpage at rvaopensource.com. Are you hungry for some pasta with a different kind of sauce? You can get your fill Saturday night at the Spaghetti Dinner with Bread and Puppet, sponsored by the All the Saints Theater Company. At the dinner, which is slated for Westover Baptist Church at 1000 Westover Hills Boulevard, you can woof down some noodles, vegan sauce, greens, bread, and aioli, and enjoy side dishes of experimental theater, provocative live music from the hot seats, and the Circus of the Possibilitarians, a horse and butterfly circus that addresses current events in a satirical fashion. Team Kate Bush of the Richmond Reproductive Freedom Project Bowl-a-thon, which includes a few open source RVA staffers, will also have a table set up at the event, which starts at 7 p.m. For more information, go to allthesaintstheaterco.com.
Who is Michelle Mosby? Before November 5th of last year, Election Eve, it would likely have been a select few outside of the seeming long-shot 9th District Council challenger's inner circle who'd have known much about her at all. But as the vote returns came back on November 6th, it was quite clear Mosby was about to become somebody. Spending less than $14,000 towards her uphill race against the well-moneyed incumbent Doug Connor, who spent more than $76,000, Mosby received a huge return on investment. She all but swept the race with nearly 65% of the vote, leaving Connor eating her electoral dust. Now, 2 months into her four-year term, Mosby, previously best known to her fellow members of the Southside Church she's attended since childhood and to clients at the beauty shop she owns, talks about her surprise win, her inspiration for tossing her hat in the ring, and why she's redoubling some of Connor's efforts to improve prospects for Richmond Public Schools students by focusing on the city's career and technical education program. I'm with Michelle Mosby. She is the new 9th District City Council person, or not so new now. She's almost a month and plus, almost 2 months in now. Mm-hmm. And she has replaced Doug Connor. And welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
And I understand that you're, as you were saying earlier, you're not too terribly used to being in front of microphones and dealing with media yet.
No, not at all.
So
everybody bear with me.
bear with us.
Yes.
Again, welcome. And I think for probably a lot of folks in the 9th District and certainly political observers around the city, your arrival on the scene was something of a surprise.
Yes. That's what I hear.
Where did you come from?
I have attended a church in the 9th District forever. Crusade for Christ has been there forever. Mm-hmm. I've been there since I was a little girl. So a lot of the older people I see on Tuesdays at the food bank because they come through on Tuesdays.
Were you working in the food bank area?
My mother works in the food bank area, and so I would come through there with them. And if they needed help. But it's more her focal point than mine. But I was very active in that church. And so I got to know a lot of people. It's a lot of people that go there from the district.
And were you being encouraged to run?
No. Never brought it up until right at the end.
But you obviously saw some need that pushed you personally to decide to take this leap, because politics is not – it's not always fun.
No, I can imagine. In 2008, I started a nonprofit called Help Me Help You, and it's to help ex-offenders get reintegrated back into society. And so I was calling around to different places trying to get involved with the people that have some things that, you know, are getting to do this thing. So I wasn't getting anywhere, and so I went to council, and
so you came and appeared before city council,
yes,
during a meeting?
Yes, to talk about Help Me Help You, gave out some brochures, and at that time, Mr. Connor said to me, "You're in my district, call me," and I did, and we didn't talk.
Didn't talk?
No, we never got together.
So you tried to, though. You reached out to him.
Yes,
after
I reached,
he reached
out to him. And Eli called back, and I came to a district meeting. And I talked about help me help you to the people.
Eli being his liaison.
And I talked about it there. And so I asked Doug, you know, I need you to get with me because as important as our career tech type of stuff, this is just as important.
And we'll get to the career tech.
Yes. But that was the action plan. Let's hit it from both sides. And we just didn't. And so at that point, I don't know any other word to say other than I got angry because I felt like all of it's important.
Now, before we go on to the other side, mm-hmm. that side of it, as you said, it's the other side of the career tech thing. It's just as important. How do you see that? And I think I see what you're saying. It's if you don't catch kids in school,
right, then they'll end up in my program. And so it's very important to me to do his thought process. Very important. I think that what he was starting was great because, like I said, if we don't help mold, help get our young people, get people in the place to be able to provide for themselves, then what's going to happen is they're going to end up being in the program. And so we've got to kind of think outside of the box and do it for real. We have to have action plans.
And what is yours? Action plan, that is.
Well, as I was campaigning, the first thing one of the things that people talked about was in our district, we don't have some type of family life center. There's not something there that our young people can go to after school, computers, do some homework. The seniors can play bingo. Just somewhere that we can call our own and it'd be a learning tool.
Now, these are popular all around the Richmond metro area. I think that Reva had gotten one, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen was pushing for one and had finally gotten it. Dolores McQuinn, when she was up in Churchill, was very active in trying to get a community center up there, and I think it also exists. So you saw a need for one on Southside.
I, from the understanding, there were some council people before me that saw the need. It didn't happen in their term. But in the last term, from my understanding, it wasn't asked for. And so I'm back to push that. We need to have that because they're still asking for this. And we have 5 elementary schools and a middle school. So our young people need something to do. If you have a facility, then it can be structured just a tad bit. When the big brother's playing basketball, the little brother can be doing homework. So we can have some things going on that are where parents are not concerned. And so that's one of the things. But getting back to even the career tech thing, I plan to push it.
And this is foreshadowing of something. Let's just to introduce the topic. This was something that Doug Connor was well known for. He was, on the the committee that was dealing with this,
yes.
Trying to push for advocate for a career technical education center in Richmond.
Yes.
Not that we don't have one, but to go to more of a 21st century model,
right,
for that career technical education center. Right now, it's it really is more nuts and bolts career tech and bringing it high tech,
right,
was where that was going. With his departure, I understand from what you were saying, you're now in charge of that committee.
Yes.
And this is something you're also equally passionate about.
Yes. Because to me, it's not one or the other. I think that sometimes we divide things that can't be divided. We can't say we want in life tier one things, but not do some things to make sure that it progresses. So we got to make sure that, and I guess sometimes our problems is figuring out what thing come first. How do we do it? You know, we want them all done, but which things come first? But so my goal, I can only, it's just me, to do my goals. So my goal is that I'll push for the career tech and at the same time push for a recidivism program.
Now, you are yourself obviously a product of some technical program. You own a beauty shop.
Yes.
And you went through a program, probably something very much like what would be available to kids at the CTE
right.
Center.
I have, you know, the nail license and all of those things. And so my goal was that when young people came from out of school and had that type of a trade, this is where they could go. It gave me higher power, where I can hire you. I can say yes.
That's
the higher power. it gives the ex-offender that has taken the trade, I have higher power. And so we need more higher power. We need some people that say yes, that have seen you be a young person and not maybe know quite what direction you're really going in, but say yes. We need some people that see ex-offender, you can't made the mistakes, still might not know really what direction, but say yes. And then, you know, kind of go out on that limb because it's not as easy as just saying yes. We got to teach them how to do bank accounts. We got to teach them how to do a lot of things.
There are a lot of things that we've fallen off on.
So they can function.
In our education system.
Right.
Now, let's go back to that. We were talking a little bit before the program. You are a product, really, of Chesterfield Public Schools.
Yes.
And you were telling me a little bit about your daughter, who's now at Virginia Union?
Virginia State.
Virginia State. And
yes.
She's studying fashion.
Yes.
She's going towards her four-year degree in fashion.
Yes.
You were telling me that she attended Richmond Public Schools for a period.
Yes. In elementary.
In elementary school. And then once you got to those higher-level classes or higher-level, the building.
Right.
Middle school and high school, you made a decision as a parent.
Yes.
And that decision was?
She was going to the Chesterfield schools where it was a product of the education that I knew that I had. And so I had to assure that she got it.
Now, saying something like that is probably going to be somewhat unpopular with some people saying, well, wait a minute, these schools are good enough for our kids and they weren't good enough for your kids.
I have the problem in the district. If I'm walking through the district, I met a lady in the nail shop that was in my district, and she said to me that her child they're not going to the high school in the district. So
what are they doing?
They do whatever paperwork or whatever it is to get them to somewhere else.
And now this is what's key. It may not be politically correct for you to say or to acknowledge having done this. I've mm-hmm. seen it. But it is what is done. It's commonly done in right. many districts. And whether you're rich, poor, African-American, white, many families, once they hit that middle school and certainly the high school, they reevaluate Richmond Public Schools and they look elsewhere.
Right. And that's, to me, where our working together to make some changes needs to happen. I mean, it kind of is what it is. I have to, as a parent.
Should it be what it is, though?
No, it shouldn't be. But it at this moment, we have an issue. And I don't think any of us can say we don't have an issue. I don't think that there's anybody that would sit on the other side of this table and say, it's all good. I just don't believe that we have that. and so I think that we recognize that there is some type of issues. And so right now we all have to come to the table, work some things out to make some things better. Not going to be an overnight situation, but it's got to happen.
And I'm assuming, too, that this comes back to what you were saying before. Where do we start? What's the first step? You want the tier one things, but you have to figure out how to get to tier one. And you have to take baby steps, so to speak. So where do you start?
Well, my first start is, to me, I ran. That's the first start. I'm a council person. I'm not just sitting
good
on
first
the,
step.
Yeah, I'm not just sitting on the sidelines complaining. I'm an advocate to do something. And so the next step for me was my school board representative, Teachy, Pinkney, we are very close.
Did you know her previously?
I knew her from being in the neighborhood, but not as like we are today.
Okay.
But we really work well together.
And she's for a long time been a tremendous advocate for kids.
Yes. And so to me, you're on the right track if you got two people with like minds trying to go somewhere. So at this point, it's about addressing our parents in our neighborhoods. It's about making people be a tad bit more vocal. Mm-hmm. That council cannot do it alone. School board cannot do it alone. It's going to take the people. There has never been where you read a book about anybody that did something, any type of movement, that they did it alone. They had some people. And so we've got to get our people to understand you have to be vocal. You have to stand up and mean what you say and kind of go at this thing like it's life or death. And for me, my daughter was life or death. Her education was life or death to me. That's how important it was. And so we have to get our people to understand it's life or death. The education of our children is life or death.
And in fact, the statistics show that.
Yes.
And now we're sadly taking it to statistics. But when you're talking about this recidivism program that you oversee.
Yes.
You're very familiar with what I guess they call the cradle to prison pipeline.
Yes.
And the statistics are astounding when you see them. The number of children that come through challenge schools like Richmond Public Schools is who drop out and where they end up.
Right.
And it's more expensive to deal with them on the back end than on the front end. And there's a lot of studies to show that.
Exactly. And so, like I said, it's not an either or. It's an and. It's you have to hit them both at the head. It's not getting around it. You have to take the best of who you have in this circle to deal with your schools, and you have to take the best of what you have in this circle to handle your recidivism, and then we have to go all in and make it happen.
Now, have you been in contact with Mr. Connor since the election? Has he, and again, going back, you'd said that disconnect was there prior to you. He attempted initially to reach out to you. You then attempted to reach out to him, but felt frustrated that you weren't getting anything more than just, I guess, lip service during the meeting, and never really made that connect to make to have your voice heard. Inspired you to run. Since your election and his unelection, has he reached out to you, or have you reached out to him to try to coordinate some of what he was doing? Or
I went to his last meeting to ask for his assistance. I haven't gotten anywhere.
Calling Doug.
I see some things as business, and some people take them personal. And for me, that doesn't work, because that leaves a hole for the people. If we don't work together, then that leaves a big blanket space. But
in politics, is all people. It's not personal.
Exactly. And so it is what it is. I haven't been able to get to Mr. Connor.
Now, going back again, I guess that election, it was an interesting election. Nobody expected it. Were you surprised?
Yes, I was highly surprised.
Have you tried to analyze it since in your head? Well, you know, what put me over the top? What inspired people to vote for me instead of Mr. Connor, who is something that was a known entity to people? He'd been a relatively decent councilman. He was involved at least in from the seat up on the dais at council meetings. And again, the CTE thing had been a big priority of his, but clearly the district, and he'd had some problems too politically, where there were some questions about his residency.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think people decided that it was time for a change, and a sweeping change at that?
When I look back on it, it was something that it took a lot of prayer for me. Because, like I said, this part of the world is not the thing that I do. I would have loved for he and I to have worked so I could say, this is what we need. And he helped mold me to get it there, but he have to do this piece. however, I believe that, and I don't know how frank I can be on the radio, but I believe that God has a way of just doing things.
You can be that frank.
Okay. And I prayed, and I really have a pastor that he kind of hangs with me a lot. And he says a lot of big words, and he talks with this etiquette. And so I said, you run. And we went through some challenges because it was he would have had to quit his job to run. But it was all because God said for me, you need to do this. This is the thing that I put for you to do. And so at the end of the day, I did what he told me, which was knock on doors. He said, you get out there and you knock on doors. Because I was like, God, I don't have any money for this. I don't know how to even start. I went to some people. I didn't get any help. And I was more surprised of not getting the help because I felt like I knew them and that they would help me. They had kind of been in this thing a while. They know people. It didn't go that way. But at the end of the day, I did. Every day I knocked on doors. It, me, my 70-year-old mom, my 22-year-old daughter, the pastor, and my god sister.
This was your team.
Yeah, and a couple others. And we knocked on doors. And it was they would give us water because it was hot. It would be one of those blazing hot days. And I'm sweating, saying, hello, can I help you? I need to talk to you. I need to tell you. I need you to tell me what you need, and I need you to let me help you. And that's what I did, just knocked on doors.
And so now here you are.
And here I am.
Now, you did get a little bit of help, right, from Marty Jewell?
Yes.
Who was unsuccessful in his bid to return. But he put some money towards you. I guess he got a little frustrated politically with Doug towards the end. Disappointed that you're not getting to serve with Mr. Jewell on council?
I miss Marty. but Marty and I still talk. He's still my friend.
Has he been anything of a political advisor for you?
I think everybody kind of gives you an opinion on, you know, how they think things go. But I think Marty and everyone kind of knows she's going to do exactly what she feels is the thing to do.
Find your own way.
Yeah. And so I like Marty because he respects that. He really does. He doesn't try to sway me to the left or to the right. If I ask a question, he'll give me an answer. And at that point, what it does for me is it allowed me to, I'm a debater to myself. I like the pros and the cons. I like to hear both sides because maybe I missed something. And so if I can hear it both ways, then at that point I can pray and ask God to give me direction on the answer.
Excellent. Well, again, here we are with Michelle Mosby. She is the new 9th District City Councilwoman. She's taken the seat from Doug Connor, who has gone on to greener pastures, or more dents, I guess, out there that need fixing. And we're going to see, of course, a whole heck of a lot more of Michelle Mosby over the next 4 years. Again, a couple more questions for you before we go. We've had some interesting politics of late with the mayor. We've seen the police chief, of course, is a big turnover. Mm-hmm. And we've seen the Redskins deal come in, which, of course, at first was much celebrated, and then there was a little bit of many tears after 100 trees went down. Mm-hmm. We've had some controversy over some of the land dealing that went on with that. What are your feelings on the mayor? I mean, you have a strong mayor in Richmond.
Yes.
How strong should he be? Is this a – are you comfortable with his level of authority?
Well, I know the mayor, but he has never strong-armed me. I mean, I just got here, but he that's not the relationship that we have. And so I can't speak on a relationship that he may have with someone else because I know that's not what he does with me. He has been very open to hear the things that I need in the district. And the Redskins, the police chief, all of those things kind of happened prior to me. Mm. I don't know what happened with the police chief and him. I have no clue.
There was quite a lot of tension there between them.
Right. Well,
famously.
but when I hear things that would say tension, it's always two sides. And so I don't get myself involved unless I need to get involved. If I can do something to change something, that's one thing. But if there's nothing I can do to change that, then I'm not going to just put myself in it. And so I left myself out of that. I let the mayor be the mayor. And if it's something that comes my way and it deals with really with this city and something that I feel like I can change, then I don't have a problem going to the mayor and saying, hey, you know, this is how I feel about it. Can we talk about it? I think that we have that type of relationship.
Now, this might be an unfair question. You're in your very first 2 months.
Yeah.
But what is council's role to you? Where do you see council's role?
I see council's role as...
And clearly you have a duty to your district.
Yes.
But council as a council.
Has a duty to the city as well. The role that I see is to ensure that that the city reaches its best potential, that we make good, sound decisions. We're not wasteful. We're not just willy-nilly with the city, period. Unfortunately, I believe that sometimes even in being a parent, sometimes you have to make decisions that the people in the house, the younger people, can't understand. But it doesn't mean it's a bad decision. It just means that sometimes you just can't understand the decision. And so I think that because it's 9 different people.
It's a lot of parents.
Yes, exactly. And so you have a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different ways that things were done in their background. So you kind of it's hard to always come to one sound decision. However, I think that since I've been there, it seems like we do our best. When the informal meetings are over, we're still wrestling, trying to make sure that we're coming up with the best answer. I can't tell people what happened prior to me getting there, but I can say that the people that were there prior to me that are still there are fair enough to go back and forth with me with answers, trying to make sure that I come away with the thought process that I'm seeing. They don't try to sway me.
You're not far enough into this to be probably fluent in budgetese, I guess. To know the city budget the way that you, I'm sure, will probably by the end of this very first year.
Right.
But clearly that is one of council's main jobs is a budget.
Yes.
And you were talking about being, I guess, judicious with the public's money.
Yes.
Are there things that you see now coming in as a still somewhat of an outsider, just a John Q. Public coming in as a council person? Suddenly you now have this ability to have your voice heard a little bit louder maybe. Are there things that you think that could be streamlined in city government? Are there areas of waste or not necessarily waste, but of efficiencies that you think need to be instituted? And, of course, just to, I guess, start that conversation, we've seen the mayor had his task force on schools during the last budget process,
mm-hmm.
And was looking to find some efficiencies between schools and the city. Are there any things like that you see as being maybe something we ought to be kind of scratching our head at and taking a second look?
Because I'm new, I'm trying to let the school board be the school board. I'm trying to hear, because there's so many of them that's new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. this is a big shakeup year.
Yes, it this whole election was just something.
Let's just say topsy turvy.
Yes, it was, and so at this point, you're kind of trying to feel your way through to see. If I put you in the job, can you do the job? And what's the best interest for the people? And what are your thought processes? I don't like adding different forces before I found out if the force that I have works. And so I just want, you know, everybody to get an opportunity to see where things are first before we go to, because when you're adding different
imposing changes or cutting without knowing what the effects were or what the lay of the land was before?
Right, You can't. I mean, I don't know where you're getting your where you're getting the foundation of it all. So we kind of got to let us see what we see. There was an extension given to the school board for their budget by council, and I think it's because we want to see where they're going, see what their heads are thinking, so that we can make some better decisions. And so to us, it seems like they were trying to work together to make some things happen. And so my thing is give opportunity. We got to give opportunity. If you're going to give me the job, let me do the job. Let me do what I do.
And that's what those people need to do, I
guess.
All right. Well, again, I'm with Michelle Mosby, and she is the new 9th District Councilwoman for the City of Richmond, taking the place of Doug Connor. Again, thank you very much for coming in to talk with us.
You're
and
welcome.
Have a lovely 4 years.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
to see
it.
You, hope to see you much, much more on the show, too.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm taking the side street to cruising down the alleyway, feeling the cool breeze across my face. I'm losing a fine and I'm breaking too fast, cause I'm not fit to go on like this.
The Academy Awards will be broadcast this Sunday, but to local film buffs interested in the burgeoning cinematic underground, the weekend event of choice will be Saturday night's James River Filmmakers Forum at the Visual Arts Center. The quarterly event, sponsored by the James River Film Society and hosted by the Society's Jeff Roll, is designed to, quote, bring together area filmmakers and others interested in independent filmmaking. Saturday's forum, a free event, will feature several new short films by area movie makers, including a new 22-minute film about one of Richmond's favorite literary sons called The Persistence of Poe. We're joined today by Jeff Roll and from Alexandria, Virginia, via telephone, Christine Stoddard. She's the co-director of the Poe movie and also an area writer, journalist, illustrator, and the publisher of Quail Bell Magazine. She was also recently named one of Style Weekly's top 40 under 40. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Jeff, I'll start with you. Tell us a little about the James River Filmmakers Forum. It's been around for 4 years now.
4 years, yeah. We are just starting our fourth year. We started this back in February of 2009. I designed this program as a talk show for filmmakers, featuring filmmakers, to highlight what's going on creatively in Richmond and surrounding areas. It's not necessarily Richmond filmmakers. Mm. We bring people in from out of town. Obviously, Christine's one of them.
Right.
And we're also going to have Paul Huggins on board on Saturday night. He's also based up in Alexandria, so he's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had people from Williamsburg and Lynchburg, and I've had people come down from Maryland.
You have a filmmaker from North Carolina on the program this time.
Yeah, unfortunately, he had to cancel because he had a big paying job that came up this weekend. And if you're a struggling filmmaker, you could obviously...
Yeah, you sympathize.
Yeah, he had to pass. Well, let's see. Do I want to do the Filmmakers Forum for free or make $5,000 doing this job?
Right. So you said it was sort of like an Inside the Actor's Studio sort of setup.
Yeah, I kind of designed that, or maybe some Q&A panels at Comic-Con or any type of convention, really, because we basically screen all of the featured filmmakers' work, and then we have a brief intermission, and then we bring the filmmakers up, line them up in a row, and I interview them one by one. And during that time period, we take questions from the audience mm-hmm. as well.
What kind of films are you going to be screening on Saturday night? We have The Persistence of Poe. What else is on the program?
Okay. Well, I did mention Paul Huggins. Mm-hmm. He's got a short film called Applications. It is basically a slightly dark and twisted short film about a woman obsessed with her appearance mm-hmm. and comparing her appearance to, say, supermodels and that type of a thing that is posted up around her makeup table mm-hmm. and her redoing her makeup. And mm-hmm. It goes into dark places from there. Paul's a great guy. This is the third time he's been on my panel. And he was a film student when he was first featured. The Filmmakers Forum is actually the second Filmmakers Forum back in May of 2009. And we've had him back once before. And every time he screens with us, he clicks it up a notch. Mm. And he's just a talented guy that it would not surprise me if he develops a feature film sometime in the next mm-hmm. 10 years, because he's still a fairly young guy. I think he's around 26. Mm-hmm. So, he's just a great guy. We're glad to have him back. And, you know, I did mention he's coming down from Fairfax. And we also had I get recommendations from the VCU faculty. Mm-hmm. And Janita Chase, who is a former panel member of the Filmmakers Forum, she now teaches at VCU, suggested I check out the work of this individual. His name's James Matisse. And I went to his Vimeo page, and I don't know if you know anything about Vimeo, but mm-hmm. it's kind of a high-end YouTube where they stream their work in HD. And I was very, very pleased with his work, and I asked him to come and screen a 12-minute short film that he did called As Best I Can Remember. Mm. And I had the pleasure of meeting him the other day, and he's a very nice guy on top of being a talented filmmaker, so we're glad to have him on board.
So that's how you curate the program. You have people that contact you, either the filmmakers themselves or perhaps, like you say, a member of the VCU faculty that has seen the work.
Exactly. And also, sometimes I have people contact me out of the blue on the internet.
Hmm.
And you know, our website, jamesriverfilm.org, has a section for the Filmmakers Forum.
Okay. I was saying, if I was an independent filmmaker, how would I contact you? But you have something on the James River Film Society.
Yeah, it is featured on our website. And it basically, they either send me a link to what they have streaming, or they'll mail me a DVD and mm-hmm. I screen it and see if it will fit on the panel, because if I have five other filmmakers and they're wanting to screen something that's 40 minutes long, it's not necessarily going to fit on
sure.
my panel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who else do you have? Or what other films?
Yeah, Nils Westergaard and Daniel Audora are also film students at VCU. They're screening a film called William. It runs 15 minutes long. It's basically a dark tale of revenge about a college prank that goes wrong.
Hmm.
And, these guys are also like really talented. And so they were actually scheduled to screen with us last September.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had them scheduled for the forum in September, but I had to cancel the forum because, my headliner dropped out at the last minute, and that was a visiting filmmaker from New York. So I had to pull the plug on that forum. Plus, James Parrish, who is the vice president of the Film Society, asked me to manage the Found Footage Festival, which was a big hit for us over at the Visual Arts Center. It was a sellout, standing room only crowd. So I just couldn't do two programs in 1 month. I had to pull the plug on my own program.
You mentioned a bunch of dark films there, a couple dark films. What kinds of movies are we seeing from today's filmmakers? Do we see a particular trend happening with some of the independent filmmakers?
I always try to book a good variety. Mm-hmm. like the next featured filmmaker, John Capello, has a short film based on the old Bible legend of Cain and Abel.
Mm.
And that was actually originally 30 minutes long. And he decided to trim it down, not just for the Filmmakers Forum, but he wanted to circulate it about out there in festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So beautifully shot work, comparable to some of the landscapes that he shot is comparable to Herzog.
And how long are these short films generally?
They can be anywhere from 5 minutes long to a half hour long, just as long as we have. Pretty much, I try to schedule the program as an hour of screenings, an intermission, and then an hour of discussion.
Right, right. Christine, you moved back to Alexandria. Did Richmond lose you? Did we lose you?
Well, I still come to Richmond on a fairly regular basis, usually once or twice a month, but I am living in Alexandria full-time now. I work at the PBS station of Greater Washington as an associate producer.
Oh, that's
so
great.
It's both good and bad, but Richmond has not fully lost me and will never fully lose me.
Good, good. Well, in recent years, you've been a busy lady. Tell me what made you want to make a film.
Right. So my boyfriend, David Fuchs, my sister, Nina, my friends, Erica Bragg, Hillary Stalling, and DJ Granger, and I decided to apply for this documentary film grant through VCU Arts. I was a film and English student at the time. David and the rest were also studying in the School of the Arts, with the exception of DJ. He was an English major. After we won the grant, we decided to pursue the film. Of course, scheduling interviews, going around student schedules, just everything didn't quite come together as much as I was hoping. So my plans for the documentary evolved. Originally, it was supposed to be more of an interdisciplinary piece with everything from experimental dance to collage-style animation and the interviews to sort of portray the patchwork life that Poe lived, just in general, not only in Richmond, but throughout the country. Nomadic was often changing jobs.
Oh, Christine, sorry, one more time. Start with, well, first of all, can I hear you again?
Yeah, can
you hear me? We're still having.
Yeah, it's the wireless.
Yeah, one more time. There you go. Much better. I'm
okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to sit still.
Yeah. Sorry. We don't do many of these phone interviews, so we're working out some kinks. But
yeah, I understand.
But I hear you great now. If you could just take it from that last part, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. So originally the idea was to do a documentary film that also had experimental dance, collage-style animation, and other more artsy elements to it to sort of portray the patchwork life that Poe led. He was a nomadic artist. He lived in several different cities, had a multitude of jobs, had a very unstable family life. But students being students, the project didn't quite pull together as I had imagined. So currently what we have is a 22-minute film. It's a pretty straightforward documentary style. And I use the animations and the experimental dance segments that we created. And I will be screening those with the documentary film at select locations in New York, twice in Richmond at Artworks and at the Poe Museum. And also in Baltimore. Now, I won't be screening those particular segments at the James River Filmmakers Forum because, as Jeff was explaining, there's only so much time, and our film is already the longest one there. But I think that these little segments will be great supplements for the other screenings where we're the only ones there, and we can take our time mm-hmm. and show as much as we want.
Right, right. Well, is it hard to co-direct a film, especially co-directing with your boyfriend, David Fuchs?
Well, luckily, David and I have worked on many projects before, not just film and video projects, but comics, different sorts of writing projects, etc. We don't necessarily have the same style, but we do have the same philosophy on art making and journalism in general.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
it helps that we get along, and yeah. it helps that we approach work in similar ways, even if we don't always come out with similar types of work, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think, what is our fascination with Edgar Allan Poe, not just here in Richmond? Why does his work still resonate, or are we just intrigued by him as a character? Sort of a drunken genius.
A combination of both. If you read any of the many biographies of Poe that are out there, really those alone are compelling stories and compelling works of, some would say, almost fiction, because mm-hmm. there are so many myths that surround Poe and his life, even today.
Right, right.
But definitely his stories still resonate with, I think, people who love Southern literature, who love mystery, horror, science fiction even. His works touch upon so many different themes and ideas. He plays around with words, concepts. He's just multifaceted, mm-hmm. and no two works are really the same.
Right, right. Jeff, what impressed you about the persistence of Poe, Christine and David's film?
Well, I was really impressed with the original debut of it at the Poe Museum. She just put together this grandiose debut with live music mm. and wine and mm-hmm. food, and it was just... I said, wow, I wish I knew how to do that.
to the Poe Museum's credit, I did not do any of that. That was all them.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was Melanie, it was Chris, the wonderful people at the Poe Museum, and their ideas.
Because she had Prebier and Gold Rush playing
Oh,
there.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said that you're going to be doing another screening at the Poe Museum later in the year, right, Christine?
Right. So the difference is what Jeff was just describing was our rough cut. We showed that back in September 2012, and we hadn't had any sort of faculty review at BCU. So this was really the first time that David and I were showing the film to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And after the film, we didn't have a formal Q&A. Honestly, I was too nervous for that at that point. But people came up to me afterwards, and they offered their insights, their critiques, their suggestions. And over the past few months, David and I have worked on improving the film, and we really just finished within the past few days and finally got the final cut to Jeff.
Right.
And that's what we'll be showing this weekend and at the Poe Museum.
So you sort of went through audience testing a little bit.
Yes, exactly. What happened with the VCU undergraduate grant was that we had a professor who was in charge of overseeing the project, but historically these grant projects do not get finished.
Mm-hmm.
And the university has a grant to encourage students to at least start a project with the understanding that they won't always get done. So my professor didn't really have a chance to review what David and I had made before I graduated in August. And this was, like I said, our first chance to show the film to anyone.
Right, right. Well, Jeff, from your previous appearance here on Open Source RVA, I know you're a horror buff. What are your thoughts on Edgar Allan Poe and why he still fascinates us?
Well, he's, I guess, a real pioneer in the genre, not just in horror or the macabre, but also in science fiction, in mystery.
Yeah, the father of the detective story, right?
Yeah, there's also a big resurgence of his popularity right now. There was a film starring John Cusack that came out last year. That was called The Raven. It was
kind of turned him into a superhero.
Yeah, it was not all that good. But there's also a television series right now with Kevin Bacon tracking down a cult of people that are obsessed with Poe. So,
right.
It just seems to be out there right now more than usual.
Well, if y'all don't mind, let's end by going off topic. Any Academy Awards picks or favorite films from the past year that got shafted by the Oscars? Christine, anything, Christine?
Sorry?
I said, you got anything, Christine? Any favorite films?
I am not the best person to answer this question. I really do watch obscure stuff, and not even recent obscure stuff.
Some Maya Darren movies and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, or, you know, I watched La Casa de los Babies last night for the first time. That was 2003. I don't always go to the theater for first runs. I tend to go for second or third, very delayed runs.
Go to the revival house. What about you, Jeff? Any,
well, I'm always the champion of the underdog, so I'm really pulling for, Beast of the Southern Wild.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that Daniel Day-Lewis will take home the Oscar for Best Actor. I thought that film was really well done, shot here in Richmond.
Very understated.
Yeah, and a lot of people I knew were in the film, you know, trickled about.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You could play Spot the Neighbor.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Spot the Pal. Yeah.
Well, you're listening to Open Source RVA, and we've been speaking with Jeff Roll of the James River Film Society and Christine Stoddard, who's co-directed a new short film about Edgar Allan Poe called The Persistence of Poe. The movie will be screened tomorrow night with five other short films at the Visual Arts Center as part of the James River Filmmakers Forum. For more info on the free event, you can go to jamesriverfilm.org. And for more on Christine's film, you can go to poerichmond.com. And that's where we'll say cut. Thanks, you two.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up another edition of Open Source RVA for February 22nd, 2013. I'm Don Harrison, and my co-hosts are Chris Dovey and Amy Daniel. Our producers are Jay Westerman and Gabby Schatzi, and our board op is the enigmatic Mannion. Mike McKenzie was played this week by the late Telly Savalas. You like us. You really, really like us. And you can show that affection by going to our website at rvaopensource.com. You can find breaking news, show podcasts, and more information on our interviewees there. We'd like to thank the Academy and you. We'll see you next week on WRIR's Audio News Digest, Open Source RVA.